Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Talking Comics Podcast. It's Wednesday, October 8th, 2025, and you're listening to episode number 722. I am your host again, Steve Say, and I am joined by Mr. Bob Ryer.
Ooh, scary, kid.
Aaron Avis is here.
Every day is scary.
And Joey Fricino.
Redwood tree, it ain't hard to see. His love.
Oh, that's right.
That opened my thighs, Steve. My thighs.
Listen. You went to the theater, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Censored version.
The sanitized Taylor Swift album is a little
wild.
Bit much. I had a good time though.
I get it, man. Emily and I were sitting next to like two like teenage children, and I was like, you know what? It's good that this is the PG-13 version.
The biggest checks. Only the biggest checks.
Only the biggest checks, not the biggest dicks.
That's right.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift
That's my favorite
is
song.
Happy and she's off the chain.
Yeah, she's off the chain. Yeah. She'll make the deals with the devil because her dick is bigger.
That's right.
Wow.
it's a journey and a half.
I love it. I had such a great time.
I had a great time too. Let me ask you this though. Were you
even
the slightest bit thrown at the end when the album was over and then they flashed back to the music video for The Fate of Ophelia?
You know, I was talking to Emily about this. I appreciate it a lot. I listened to the album on my commute in that morning. So I'd already listened to the music, heard all the naughty versions of the songs, and enjoyed it. I really liked it a lot. I wasn't a big fan of
the double album.
Yeah. Tortured Poets. I wasn't that taken with it. So I was happy to have a kind of like return to pop. Cause that's what I want to listen to. I want to listen to pop when I listen to Taylor Swift, you know? I really enjoyed it. I had such a great time with it. I thought it was a lot of fun. And then we went to the movie and they showed the movie music video and I was like, oh, that was really cool. And then they did the interviews with her for every single song. And I'm not a fan of the lyric video trend that has been on YouTube the last 5 years or so, but whatever, it was fine. It was funny.
It was okay. Yeah. They needed another like 4 or 5 rotations of shots.
The setups were crazy.
They were, and they were cool, and I love like going through the different eras and the different periods of showgirl times and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But like they had more of a variety of like the number of shots that they were rotating through at the beginning, and as the album went on, there were like less of them.
My bigger issue is they needed more setups for the interviews. They kept talking to her in the same chair, in the same like same area, and I was like, you clearly did this all in one go and it's upsetting to me. But then I was kind of glad that they showed us the music video again, because you watch the whole movie and it's like a making the video kind of thing, throwing back to MTV making the
video,
like
VH1 storytellers.
Yeah, right. And that was cool, because then like you watch the music video again and like you saw how they did all the like shots and the gags, and I thought that was really cool. Ultimately, they needed to get to an hour and a half, you know, and it's fine. I had a good time with it. I always like those behind the scenes, behind the music type deals anyway. And I really like the album too, and I know like the discourse online is annoying, but I also don't care about that, you know. I've been realizing, and it applies to kind of like us on the show too, something that we've been talking about, which is like a lot of the discourse around the Taylor Swift album has been about people's review of the album is essentially, it's not what I expected and therefore I don't like it kind of thing. And it's got me thinking about, like, when we go to see, like, you know, Marvel movies or we read a comic or whatever, and we kind of review how much it meets our expectations versus how much, like, what it actually is. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we talked about the Captain America movie, Brave New World, how we talked about how, like, you knew so much about that movie and you were told so much about that movie that when you saw that movie, you rated it against your expectations of it and the things you knew as opposed to what you were seeing. It's a
I
hard
knew
thing
Winter
to do.
Soldier, and that was no Winter Soldier kind of
no,
thing.
No, of
yeah.
course. I understand yeah. that, but it's hard. I think it's hard for people universally to kind of let go of what they want to mm-hmm. evaluate what they get, you know? And it's hard, especially like on our show, which is like comics and characters that we love and stories that we love, to think about like reviewing what we see and not what we want. And again, I fall victim to this all the time too. I fall victim to that with Fantastic Four. You know, there's things about that I know I nitpick, but in reality, like I just need to let go because that movie is awesome and it's the best version of those characters that we've gotten. But you know, it's hard to do that when it's something that like people care about, obviously, a lot.
Ooh, where do you hear one of my reviews of comics tonight?
Awesome. All right. Well, why don't we get around to some comics? We'll spare people the rest of our Taylor Swift talk. We can talk off air if we must. But I also had a good time with it. You're making me rethink my number grade for the movie, though.
Which movie?
I reviewed it for Joe Blow.
Oh, I want to make something very clear. I had a great time.
Oh, yeah. No. But what you're saying about like it looking probably that they filmed all of the little like interstitial bits of her talking about the introducing
in one
the
go.
Songs in one go.
Absolutely.
I didn't really pick up on it because I was so kind of in the moment. We had a pretty rowdy theater
Us
when we
too.
Went to go and see it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there was like a bachelorette party going on or something, but there the entire two front rows were up. They were dancing. They were chatting. Holy shit, were they chatting? Like Ooh. All of those little warnings they give you before the movie starts, they paid no heed whatsoever. Yeah. They were like,
well,
"This
is them. It's a concert."
Well,
yeah,
I know.
This is
I
a
know.
Unique experience. Also, there were no trailers before ours. In fact, we were warned by AMC. This is starting at 5:00. Don't come late.
You're right. Holy crap. I didn't even realize that.
Nicole Kidman did not welcome us to the theater.
Oh,
we got commercials, though.
We don't get commercials. Well, actually, no. We've been getting commercials stateside now. That's a new thing that AMC is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be like trailer, trailer, progressive, trailer, trailer.
Yeah.
Like,
man.
And it's I hate it. I really do.
All right. Why don't we get to why don't we jump over to Bob since he seems to. My cat is being obnoxious. No, she's fine. She's just, she wants to be on the podcast. She's like, the cricket is gone. Now is my time.
We need animals on the show.
Yeah, yeah. She'll sing us the songs of her people, I'm sure. I apologize if you hear her in the background. There's not a whole lot I can do about it. All right, Bob, why don't you start us off this week?
All righty then. For the very first time, I am extremely disappointed with an issue of Poison Ivy by G. Willow Wilson.
Uh-oh, I didn't read this. What's going on?
Not to say it's the words, as this is a brilliant multi-level story with some unexpected turns. The art, however, is without question the absolute worst that this series has featured in more than 3 years.
Oof.
This includes issue 36, just in case we're picking nits, so to speak. Picture, if you will, Poison Ivy as drawn to look like Big Barda, but with huge tracts of land more appropriate to the cover of a porn video.
Hmm.
I'm not going to mention the quote-unquote artist's name, as I don't rat on people. But you'll know their work when you see it.
I ain't no rat.
So, sorry. Sorry about that. Hopefully we get back to Marcio Takara and away from this track. Quickly and a lot less painfully, not completely painfully, painlessly, I should say. The Satanic Panic one shot was a fun Halloween anthology with the individual chapters tied together trick or treat style by a final chapter by Callie C. Miller and Megan Huang that features that 80s icon, the ambush bug. Yeah, loved every story in this. My only complaint, and it's my complaint because apparently people around here shared it with each other electronically. It cost me $10. But I liked it. I still like it. Anything with Zatanna, I'm going to love. And we've got some other good. We have Batman and Constantine and Swamp Thing. So it's a lot of fun anyway. But if you can get it cheaper than $10, do so. Cheetah and Cheshire Rob the Justice League by Greg Rucka, Nicholas Scott, Annette Quok, and Troy Petiri continues to be an engaging heist movie comic, with this third issue giving us a glimpse into the actual plan to break into the Watchtower to steal the power bank, the repository of backup superpowers. That, sure, that's what you have. Simply put, it's just a great team on and behind the page. Just a great read, and I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful trade because I don't know. I'm in a four different store rotation, and I look, and I don't see extra copies of this on the shelf. So they're either all pre-sold or they're selling off the shelf, which would be lovely, but I'm thinking it's the former, not the latter. Birds of Prey, numbers 25 and 26, Kelly Thompson, Cliff Richard, Sammy Basri, Adrian Lucas, Clayton Coles. They're the start of an arc titled The Unreality, and it's kind of a heist thing too. The birds and their sort of ally Inke, fresh off possessing Barda, where she's trying to make amends by supplying intel on the shadow army that's been plaguing the team. That this op basically involves the heroes cosplaying and entering a virtual reality gaming platform. What could go wrong? Plenty. But anyway, as always, great character work, tons of good humor from Ms. Thompson, and it's a really nice setup for next issue. Finally, Gotham Academy First Year number one with story by Carl Kershaw, Brendan Fletcher and Becky Cloonan, script by Brendan Fletcher, art by Marco Ferrari, colors by Eva De La Cruz, and letters by Steve Wands. First off, I was going to go back and reread the original first few issues to compare and contrast. Yep. But I quickly came to the conclusion that would do a disservice to this series. So I'm just reading here as if the older and much beloved series around here didn't even exist. What we have here so far, we have Olive Sherlock's first week at the school, meeting roommate Lucy Hunt. We get Kyle, her classmate, who we're going to know a lot more if we go along, some more of her professors. And there's some settling in stuff, although that isn't really the case, as some unsettling things are occurring, even if her sponsor, Bruce Wayne, thinks this school is a safe haven for Olive. We know better from the old book, but I'm, again, trying to stay away from that. There's some terrible goings on that Olive was involved with her mom and that Bruce is trying to get her away from. And we do applaud that. We all adored the original. And I think this retelling, with some bonus content, some extra fill-ins, is going to live up to the standards of that series. So I'm in, and hopefully it will be something that I'm going to tout to everyone I see, because I want this to sell like hotcakes at IHOP. But we'll see if that works. Anyway, I'm done. I'm done rambling.
Question from the back of the room. Okay. Are we going into this series without anything having happened? Because this simultaneously, I'm talking about Gotham Academy, by the way. I felt like I need to do a reread of the first series in order to pick up some of what this book is putting down. Or are we ignoring all of that and starting fresh? I can't really tell.
Ignore and start fresh.
Okay.
Just in case, let's say that Brendan Fletcher decides to add or subtract. If we're bringing that other baggage along, it may not apply here. So that's right. The one reason I didn't want to go there. As much as I wanted to, believe me, I had the box in hand.
Yeah.
No. I'm going to read this book as if I should.
Okay, because they were bringing some stuff up that I'm like, okay, I remember this happening, but to the level of detail that they were talking about it, it felt like I was supposed to be like intimately involved with this story and this knowledge to get. But I guess that's just them retelling it, and my brain not being able to decide if I should keep the older stuff in mind or not. And also, there's a character missing
So
from
far,
so far. Yeah, I mean,
we
there's no
met
Gotham
some
Academy
of the.
without so and so.
Yes, we met, but we met so and so. So
Yes,
there's
yes,
some
yes,
tennis
yes.
going on. So, you know.
There is some tennis going on. I want some cartography, if you will.
Well, that cartographer has been in Birds of Prey fairly recently and is mentioned in the last issue, as a matter of fact.
God, of all the things that I need to catch up with really badly, Birds of Prey
Yes,
is
you do.
probably at the top of the list. I was doing so well, and then I caught up, and then I wasn't reading month to month, so it's my own fault. All right, that'll be my thing.
Maps has a future, let me just say it that way.
I love
Oh.
Maps so much. He's such a great character. She's so much fun. Joey, you want to jump in
Yeah.
here?
I read Satanic Panic on the DC Universe Infinite app, and I know Bob, you and I talked about this last week about when I brought up Satanic Panic, and then you said, "By the way, it's $10." I said, "No, thank you."
Yes.
Which is a bummer because I actually did have a lot of fun with it. I think DC does a good job with these kind of like holiday specials. There's some really great stories in here, some really great, especially great looking stories. I really like the kind of special issues because they always bring in artists that you don't necessarily see on the everyday kind of books for the mainline books. I love the Zatanna story. Which one else?
Raleigh Rossimo on
Oh
Plastigrad
yeah,
was
the Riley
a
Rossmo
lot of
story was
fun.
awesome. I love the Raven
Written by Daniel
story.
Warren Johnson, of course.
Yes, which was
Yeah.
really, really cool. And I loved, there was one other one that I really liked. Oh, the Batman story, which was so weird.
Yes.
The snake eating itself story. But yeah, really weird, really fun. The Swamp Thing one was really great. Really fun. Great start to the season, as they say. And there's some really wonderful kind of like horror themed characters in the DC universe to play with. So it was a really cool issue. I don't know if I would have spent $10 on it. So I was glad that it was on my app. So kudos to you, Bob.
Yeah, I had pre-ordered it 2 months ago and kind of knew what the price was, and I get a lovely discount for being a 43-year customer.
Sure.
But even at that, it was a wow, okay, that was the price of two other comic books.
Yeah. It's tough. I remember seeing this past week like a bar graph of like comics profits and like kind of going up the last like 10 years or so. And I was like, yeah, that's because they're not drawing the line at $2.99 anymore. They're
Yeah.
charging us more, and that's why you're just getting those kind of incremental kind of like earnings on comic sales. And of course you add in the manga stuff, but like I don't think those numbers mean what you think they mean. You know, we're just getting charged more for the same product in some ways. But anyway,
Right.
we don't need to get into that.
The product's up 33% price wise. So if the
Yeah.
profits are up the same, oh, what a surprise. Comics.
Drawing the line at $4.99. All
I
right.
can remember when it was a big deal when it went from 15 cents to a quarter.
Boo.
And the way they got around it is they put them into, they gave extra pages and backup stories, and they were square bound, looking like the annuals used to. And then they did that for a couple of months and then left the price at either 25 cents or 20 cents and cut it back to the other book. They thought no one would notice. Ah, we all noticed and we all complained.
Rough,
Inflation.
rough times.
Inflation.
Inflation from a quarter to $5.
Oh.
Damn. All right, let's move on. Mr. Aaron Amos.
Yeah, let's do this super quickly. No,
Great,
stop.
grace us. What is
So yeah.
the latest with the gates?
Don't be trying to steal my thunder and rush me. You'll get it when you get it. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is Kill All Immortals 2, issue number 1, written by Zach. Kaplan, Fico Osseo, and Tiago Roca. Just a quick summary of Volume 1. We had the Oswald family. They were a group of immortal Vikings who were essentially granted the power of immortality by a tree. I'm just going to leave it there. A world tree type situation 1,000 years ago. And they used that time to basically become conquerors and multi-billionaires, etc., etc. You have Frey, who is the only daughter. You have Eric, and you have who's the father, and we have their various siblings. Frey meets a reporter who essentially finds out about them in a way and decides he wants to maybe write a story that will in some way implicate them. And the family rule has been, no, we can't let that happen, so anyone who finds that out has to die. Well, Frey doesn't want that to happen, and you know that's what leads to all the chaos and hilarity of Volume 1. In the end, just to set up this volume, in the end, Frey ends up getting one over on them and destroying the source of their immortality, so now they're mortal. And so that leads us directly into Volume 2. We open up and we see one of the brothers, whose name I cannot remember, to be honest with you, I'm sorry. We see one of the brothers basically struggling to maintain the family business, this multi-billion dollar multinational corporation and all their power, basically the seat of their power structure, in light of a hostile takeover that's occurring. And essentially without the appearance of his perceived dead or disappeared father, Eric the Red, not sure how that's going to happen. Well, that turns out to be the least of his problems, because while he's trying to figure all this out, he's visited by, let's just say, some people who are not exactly fans. And these people try to take him out because now they know, A, that he was immortal, and now that he's no longer immortal. Turns out he wasn't the first of the family to get this little visit. All of them are being attacked. All of them are being hunted down, to include Frey, who we see now is trying to use the family's power and influence to create a charity of sorts, to sort of give back to society. Well, while she's attempting to do that at some big highfalutin function, she's attacked. So we come to find out something that the kids at least never knew before, is that they were not the only immortals on the planet. Apparently, Frey believed they were, and that by eliminating their immortality, that just put them on even keel with everyone else. Turns out, no, you've now just put targets on everyone's back, because now you have a whole bunch of other immortals coming to take them out. Who's coming? The Khan family. Basically, you know, Genghis and all them are coming to seal the deal, essentially, and rub them all out. That brings us to the end of this first issue, with Freya sitting there with egg on her face, saying, whoops, my bad, sorry, I didn't mean to yank all of our immortality away and leave us sitting here vulnerable to everyone who hates us and is wanting to kill us for a millennia. And we find out that there's someone who may be able to assist them, not by giving them back their immortality, but by knowing some of the secrets that the others don't know. So that's where we sort of left off, and we see where things are going. I do appreciate this a little bit better than I did the first volume, because the first volume, I feel like it took a little ways to sort of ramp up. This one sort of jumped right in. And by the end, you are full steam ahead into what is going to be this sort of race for your life, you know, trying to turn the tides type scenario. I don't know. I feel like this volume had more energy than the first. I enjoyed the first, but I do feel like it was, you know, maybe half of it was focusing on a relationship that so far hasn't really presented itself in the second volume. And maybe could have been spent that time in real estate in the book, could have been spent building out the family some more. But I think we're going to get that in this volume. So I enjoyed the first volume, but this volume seems to have engaged me a little bit sooner than I anticipated. So check it out. Again, Kill All Immortals by Dark Horse. You know, do your thing. Check it out. It's out there. Next thing is not a book. It's an anime. You may remember I said last week that this is around the time where I start trying to catch up on all the things that I'm probably going to see or participate in at New York Comic Con. One of them is I mentioned that I got access to one of the panels for Trigun. Trigun Stargaze, I believe, is the panel. So I decided to catch up on some of the Trigun lore. So I watched on Crunchyroll, I watched Trigun Stampede, which is basically a 2023 sort of anime reboot of, I believe, a 1998 or 99 version of the manga. We essentially have Vash the Stampede, who's this sort of pacifist gunman who's on a hunt for his twin brother. His twin brother, Million's Knives, is sort of like a polar opposite of Vash. One is sort of I wouldn't say a champion of, but a protector of humanity, even though humanity is not all that fond of them. And the other basically wants to rub humanity out altogether. They are what's known as independent plants. Basically, they're sort of like these bioengineered energy sources. And I guess normal plants that are sort of connected are literally just that. They are connected. They aren't really seen as having a voice or anything of that nature. So they're part of a herd, a hive, if you want to call it that. Whereas Vash and Millions are independent. They have a humanoid look and feel. They're twins, and they both have, you know, certain abilities. But because of something they both participated in that you see at the beginning of the story that changed the course of the human race and sort of put them in a place that they had not anticipated being, and sort of put them at the in a state where they had to sort of turn the tide and the way that they use the plants. Vash looks at them like, looks at human, I'm sorry, Millions looks at humans like parasites. And his objective is to wipe them clean, start a new world, and just be done with it, focus on the plants. Vash obviously has some issues with that, and so hilarity ensues. That is the focus of their little, what do you want to call it, their little, you know, combative relationship there. This is another thing, another sort of, I have this sort of not gripe, but opinion sometimes of certain anime. Sometimes certain anime, and I know it's in keeping with the style, they really do like to start off slow. And they often like to start off with more of a comedic sort of slant on things. It's almost sort of, it's like it starts off with a comedic slice of life type feel to it. And that happens here. You have the introduction of the other characters, Meryl and Roberto and Nicholas Wolfwood and all those guys, the other newscasters and people that are following them. You have the introduction of all them, but they're focused on a lot in the beginning, and they seem to be comedic relief at some points. They are plot driving at other points, but it is clear that they are at the forefront of the story for maybe the first episode and a half or so, whereas Vash seems to be in the back. By the time the series wraps up, which I believe there's 12 episodes, completely switched. There is a complete focus on Vash and what's happening there. The tone of the series evolves from being sort of lighthearted to being very epic, in a sense. The animation continues throughout the entire series to be incredibly sort of flowing, and I just enjoy it. It's sort of like a, it's not necessarily anime animation. It's almost like computer generated animation, like a combination of the two. I appreciate it. Now this is sort of part one. They're, like I said, we're going to go see what happens with Stargaze, which is going to be released, I believe, is set to premiere in 2026. But they're going to have a sort of a presentation of sorts at New York Comic Con, so I'll get to see more there. It's expected that the story with Stargaze is going to sort of wrap up this battle between Vash and his brother and the plants and what happens there. Although this first volume came to a quote-unquote end, that is satisfying and that it gives a complete story, there is clearly room for there to be, you know, add on to the story from a cinematic perspective. So I appreciated it. Again, started off slow, but by the time you're maybe a third or a quarter of the way through, you begin to see the stakes rise and why things are happening the way they're happening. And so it picks up pace and becomes a little bit more settled. So, you know, be patient with it, et cetera.
Okay, so girl, let me tell you. Okay. So Joey Armstrong tries to stop Vanessa from digging too deep into what happened to whom? Doug, because pouring out for Doug, he flew off into a ditch.
Oh no.
And is gone. He is gone. Shit. He had a quote unquote drunk driving accident. It was not an accident, but Joey knows it. Because Joey had Vanessa's legs way up in the air while her husband was having Doug thrown way into the ditch. Anyway, in other news, back at the hospital, Shanice is trying to get Derek to confess that despite the fact that he had a house fall on him and a fire and he is paralyzed, he is starting to get feeling back in his legs, but he don't want to confess it because if he does, he thinks his fiance Ashley, the other DEI hire on the show, is going to want to not marry him because she won't feel the sympathy for him anymore. So he's lying about the whole thing, even though he can't walk yet, but he can still feel, but he's not telling her. I never liked him. Anyway, Danny and Bill, ex-husband and wife, because Bill cheated on Danny with her daughter's best friend, who is now his wife, seemed to have a clear connection. And Bill planted one on her at the hospital because Danny went to Vegas at the hospital, at the law firm, because Danny went to Vegas and got married to young Andre, who's blowing her back out on a daily basis. She told him, and I quote,
Jesus Christ.
And I quote, Danny told Andre last week, as her new Vegas husband, his one job is to give her at least 3 orgasms a week. And that is a quote.
On a show?
On the show.
On broadcast television?
On broadcast television. Yes. I'm trying to tell you. Anyway.
What Jersey Shore has wrought.
Oh, listen, Jesus.
It is. Meanwhile, Tomas, after poor Tomas, or they call him online, No Mas, because everybody thinks he has to go. This man, he cannot act his way out of a paper bag. But apparently that's not the only thing he can't do, because last week Kat told him he got no skills.
He is small, but it's fierce.
He is not laid it down. Kat said, sorry, you're not doing it. And so he said, I'll show you, and went right over to her sister and said, let me try with this one. And she said he was amazing. And so now, yeah, it's not going so well for him, Kat, and Eva. I'm just going to leave it there. Lastly.
There's more?
This is the last thing. Ah, oh, good Lord. Now we got Chelsea and Nicole. Chelsea, the woman who was kidnapped and force-fed birthday cake or wedding cake. He's going through her PTSD still. You know, she did her launch of the Chelsea Cat purse line online, and then her sicko kidnapper somehow got a phone and called into the live stream and freaked her out. So now we're going to have to watch her deal with PTSD. But there's a lesson to you. Be careful who you have threesomes with, because they might come back to kidnap you and force feed your wedding cake. Anyway.
Yep. That's what'll happen.
That's the lesson. Anyway, that's what happened last week in Beyond the Gates.
Wow.
See you next time.
Wow. Just to clarify, everyone, the reason that I laughed when Aaron was talking about car accidents on birthdays or whatever, when you put your hands up, I don't know if you saw, but all the balloons came up on Zoom, and it's just like talking about this horrible car accident. All these balloons come up.
Birthday! You know.
It was hysterical.
I'll be honest with you. Doug kind of did it to himself. He got into a gambling thing with Joey. He was $250,000 in debt.
Oof.
Yeah, Vanessa had to go into a money laundering business with Joey to get him out of debt. And then, you know, basically she started.
Hasn't this show only been on for like a year?
7 months.
Yeah.
7 months. Yes. So I'm telling you, you don't know what you're missing. Anyway.
Aaron, what do you think of the art for Trigun Stampede? It's very.
It's a clear mix of like CGI with, I guess, it feels like a little something more.
Have you seen the video game Hades?
I have not.
Okay, the artwork for me is giving Hades. It's extremely like just stepped out of a salon. I don't hate it. I don't hate it. I just it's a very different look from what I remember Trigun looking like.
Oh yeah, it's a very. I went back and looked at some of the 99, 98 anime, and it is completely different. What I will say is this animation style really, really plays well when it comes to those like high action scenes. It really, really gives you a lot. It just, I don't know, it's it again, like I said earlier, epic. It gives you sort of like epic view of things, where even if your focus is on the main characters of the scene, there's still so much going on in the background. So it's sort of like, it's not, hey, just look at this one thing that's happening in the middle of the screen. Look at the entire story that's being told visually. So I do appreciate that.
Yeah.
I sometimes get a little put off when movies like, what is that? Sack, what is that? Oh God, that anime with the cyborgs. I can't remember. Anyway,
Ghost in the
it's,
Shell?
yes, thank you. Ghost in the Shell. I sometimes get turned off when they become too CGI and it looks very stiff, and it's not as
Yeah.
free flowing and sort of realistic. You
I know what
sort
you're
of,
saying. It's
yeah.
almost like it's lit differently when you're looking at it in motion. Almost like it's like the
Yeah.
animation is superimposed.
Yeah, it's, yeah. So I appreciate this. I appreciate what they're doing here. And again, I always think the test of the animation is the action scenes.
I'm looking at the trailer for it now, and I think you're right. Like I like Toho animation. I always have. But seeing it in motion and it all kind of working together, like the overall look. Like I don't care much for the Marvel animated stuff that they've had going on. Like one of the reasons why I haven't run to watch Marvel Zombies yet is because I just don't care for the overall art style. But this is actually similar, but a little bit more pleasing on the eyes. I don't know, this
I
looks
enjoyed it.
cool.
I like I said, it's, they take advantage of all the screen real estate with things to view and focus on. So I think it's one of those things that you can watch a couple times and probably see something different.
Have you checked out Clevetus on Crunchyroll yet?
I have watched some of it because I think it came up on like my, what is that, For You thing.
Yeah.
But there's a bunch up there that I've given like one episode to see if I want to continue. So I don't think that's one I'll
Okay.
finish yet.
I mean, if you got the chance, if you're like kind of fishing around, give it either another go or watch it for the first time, whatever it is. I really enjoyed that a lot. It really picks up steam by, I mean, the second episode. Like it's pretty gnarly. I don't know. I liked it.
Maybe I should give them two episodes before I decide if I want to watch it.
Yeah.
Ooh, also, last minute thing, I watched Slow Horses. Y'all not watching that, y'all need to get on that.
Is that an
What
Apple
is it?
Plus?
Yes. So
Gary
good.
Oldman.
It's so
Yeah.
good. And Only Murders in the Building. So good.
Oh, Only Murders is awesome. I love that show.
Oh my gosh. So good.
Meow, 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 meow.
Okay, now I'm done. That's my
All
little
right.
amount. And then some.
Aaron's floating away. We're gonna have Joey do a lightning round.
Oh, I don't have much. It's October, so it's spooky season for me. The only month out of the year that I watch horror films. I can talk about what I've seen so far. We'll get there later.
Yeah.
I did read two things. I read Huck Big Bad World number 5 of 6. So we're to be concluded next month. We'll see how that goes. Mark Millar and Raphael Albuquerque. Here's what I'll say about this book. There's a note, editor's note in this book that says, this story takes place before the events of Big Game. To which I said, WTF is that? Because I haven't read any of that Millar World stuff. So I don't really know the context there. Maybe Aaron, you can help me out with that. But, this is a interesting issue because Huck spent the first 4 issues of the run meeting all these new superpowered people that met the witch and all that stuff. And then issue 5 is, Mr. Malik and the Witch Guard whacking them all. They all just eat it in this issue, which is crazy to me. Millar spends 4 issues world building and then burning it down in a single issue, kind of off panel too, which is pretty wild.
Oddly,
Look,
you just described the big game. Anyway, go
well, there
ahead.
you go. I like the Huck series. I liked Huck 1. I liked Huck 2. I think the art's fantastic. Albuquerque's always one of the best. The story's been weird and kind of oddly paced. I'm excited to read the last issue just because the cliffhanger here is very exciting. I like the character too. So I don't know. I don't have any context for the larger Miller world, so I don't know where this fits in. It does feel like Huck 4, end of 4, into 5 feels like, hey, guess what? This is also part of that. And I remember way, way, way back when, maybe I'm imagining this, but I remember, Aaron, you and John maybe saying when we read Huck 201, how does this fit? So maybe this sorts things. I don't know, but I'll wait till later for maybe you can talk a little bit about that. I also read a graphic novel that came out last month called Shadow Planet. This is from Image by Giovanni Barbieri and artist Gianluca Pagliarini. So Barbieri said in an interview, it's some kind of Star Trek with cigarettes, sex, and bad language. Pagliarani added, it's a bonanza of rusty rockets, clunky spacesuits, and hideous monsters. So that's accurate. This is kind of a retro-futurist B-movie comic. It's got everything you'd think when I use that description. The premise from the solicit, the crew of the rocket Vidar lands on a barren planet to rescue a lost patrol, but what they find can destroy mankind. It's body horror, Lovecraftian stuff. It's naughty. It's grotesque. It's The Thing meets Annihilation meets Alien. Like, it's got all of those kind of like hard sci-fi alien on a planet. Like, crew goes down to an abandoned ship on a planet. You know what's going to happen. There were several panels where I turned the page and I'd be like, oh, boobies. Or I'd be like, oh, gross body horror monster eating a human face, right? Or I'd turn the page and I'd be like, sir, don't go into that spaceship, you know? Like, it's one of those stories. It does it in about 100 pages. The art from Pagliarani is awesome. If you're familiar with kind of like Italian comics, it looks like that. It looks like Quarter Maltese. It looks like those kinds of books, right? And I think Barbieri does a good job playing into the genre. You have to be willing to engage in that genre. I think it's there's elements of that kind of like B movie 70s science fiction kind of genre that, you know, may rub against modern sensibilities. But I did have a good time with Shadow Planet, especially thinking about kind of the spooky season that we're in. In terms of spooky season, I started my Halloween viewing on October 1st. That's what I do every month.
Good
for
you.
Every year.
That's how to do it.
My 1 month of horror films. I started with the 28 series. I did 28 days, 28 weeks, because I wanted to get to 28 years later, which is wild because that first movie came out in 2002. It's very impressive. And like, you can tell the impact that that film had on like zombie movies in the aughts. 28 weeks later came out in 2007. I do like that one too. Worst Father Ever. Right. And a young Imogen Poots, who I think does a fantastic job in that film. Jeremy Renner, of course, kind of pre Marvel stuff too. It's a little bit more of a kind of action zombie movie. It's really interesting to kind of think about how like the genre that was popular at the time becomes the film, you know, and horror has a good habit of following that. 28 years later is a weird movie. I don't know if anybody on the show got a chance to watch that, but like,
I did.
It's an odd one. It's a really weird, weird movie. It does some really strange things. I don't know how I feel about it. I think Ray Fiennes is really fun
but he's sort of Colonel Kurtz from Apocalypse Now, right?
Yeah, but like in a weird kind of like positive hero of the story kind of way. Very weird. I liked it for, I think, because it was so odd to me. I did The Blackening, which you can watch on Netflix. This is 2022. Aaron, have you seen this one?
Oh my God, so many times.
I think that movie is so funny. I loved it so much.
Howling,
so good. So like, just every line is a send up, You know, you're no one is safe in that movie for all the right reasons. I watched Heretic with the Hugh Grant one, which I thought was amazing. So good. So kind of ominous. Really, really great film there. And then I watched some stinkers that I of course enjoy. You know, I watched Drop, which was from this past year,
Oh, I was gonna watch
texting
that.
the airdrop movie. It was so stupid, but I thought it was a lot of fun. I watched Villains, which came out a couple of years ago, kind of a reverse home invasion gone wrong. I watched Black Phone, the Ethan Hawke one, and Scott Derrickson one, which I thought was very, very
Nice.
good. I like that one a lot.
I like that one a lot. I can't wait to see the second one.
That one, I gotta tell you, man, like that movie started, and I saw, like, based on the story by Joe Hill, and I was like, I know exactly how this movie's gonna go. Like, there's something about that kind of like Stephen King, Joe Hill, like, kind of like sincerity, sentimentality wrapped up in horror tropes that, like, I expected. I really enjoyed it, and I thought Ethan Hawke was really fantastic in it. I'm surprised it's getting a sequel.
Yeah, a little bit.
But whatever, man. I also did not realize that movie came out in 2021, which is wild.
I'm just gonna say this, and then I'll shut up about the sequel. I am getting heavy Freddy Krueger vibes from what the new situation is with him in
Oh
the
yeah.
second movie.
Probably, like, yeah, Ethan Hawke is gonna be, you know, I think in the head, you know. But we'll see how that goes. And then the last two I caught was I watched The Endless, which was by Aaron, what's his name? Aaron Moore and Justin Benson. I think those are two, the guys that are running show directing the Daredevil show now. They brought in to direct the Daredevil show. It's one of their like kind of early films, kind of this like sci-fi UFO death cult kind of thing. Apparently it's kind of like one in a series, so I don't know if I'll check out the rest. It's really interesting to watch kind of like an early film of these like film school guys who are now kind of bigger names to kind of go back and watch those early movies. It was cool. You could catch it on Peacock. And then the last one I watched yesterday, which was god awful. Emily was watching with me and she was just like cackling at how bad it was. 1998's Disturbing Behavior,
Oh yes.
starring James Marsden and Katie Holmes,
Yep.
the kind of like conformity jocks movie, you know, that was a silly one that I fit in yesterday, but I've gotten into, I used to do like one a day, but now that there's so much on streaming of horror films, they're making so many horror movies now because the world is horrible, you know, that
It's
it's
happened in the
really easy
past, yes.
to find them everywhere. I'm now up to, what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And we're recording on the 7th. So I'm a little bit ahead of the curve. There's a few I still want to do. I still want to do all the Conjurings this season. I want to do Nia DaCosta's Candyman. I haven't seen that one yet.
Oh,
Oh, that was
so
very
good.
good. I
So
watched
good.
the
I saw that.
original Candyman last year. So I was like, all right, let
Watch
me
them
get
back
into.
to back.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm
Yeah,
excited.
okay.
So I got a few lined up. There was another one that came out this year that I missed. Oh, I'm waiting for Weapons to come onto
Yes,
streaming.
that's awesome. So
Yeah.
good.
So it's my spooky season. I wasn't, I think last year I did a better job of watching like really hard, like unsettling horror. Like last year, I watched like Texas Chainsaw, the original, which is like honestly, genuinely one of the most unsettling horror films I've ever watched. I did Amityville. I did Lake Mungo, which if you haven't seen, you should absolutely watch. Like that movie is amazing. I did Candyman. Like I watched some really unsettling horror last year. And this year, I find myself kind of watching like the more kind of comedic, kind of sloshy,
Yeah,
like
man, you need a
schlocky, kind of like,
break.
but also like those 28 movies are kind of weird, you know? So I don't know. It's just kind of where I'm leaning this year. We'll see how it goes. I'm into that kind of like comedy, black horror kind of stuff. So we'll see how it goes. But that's where I'm at now.
We tried watching Bronwyn had never seen Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
I fucking love that movie.
She 2/3 through the movie, she's sitting on the couch behind me. She just goes, This sucks.
Oh, it's so that movie is awful, and I love it.
it's fun when it's fun. It's got that 2000s energy,
yes,
flowing through it. But there's too much like wartime politicking kind of stuff toward the end, where it really kind of loses its momentum of him actually doing the vampire hunting.
Have
And
you done
it can't decide what it wants to be at some point.
No, absolutely. Some studio guy was like, this needs to be a serious dark
action. It needs
action
to be
film.
More recognizable as Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah. So have you done the other Seth Graham that's Pride and Prejudice and Zombies?
I've never seen that. I think she has, but I've never
that,
seen it.
That cast is wild. The people that they got to do that movie is insane.
Isn't what's her face in that movie?
It's Lily James, and it's who else?
I saw that.
I was gonna say Keira Knightley, but I think I'm
no,
wrong
not
about
Keira
that.
Knightley.
No, I know who you're thinking of, but no, I'm never gonna remember. Never mind. I actually saw that though, believe it or not.
It's Lily James, Sam Riley, Matt Smith, Bella Heathcote, Charles Dance, Lena Headey, Jack Houston, like all these wild people from like mid to 20 teens are in that film.
Would have been in a Pride and Prejudice movie, but now it has zombies. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. They cast a Pride and Prejudice movie and then they put zombies in it.
It's pretty brilliant.
It's pretty awesome.
Is it worth seeing? Should I seek it out?
I mean, it's worth seeing in the same vein that Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer is worth seeing.
I don't know about that. That's not much of an argument. Oh, boy.
So, Joey,
go ahead, Bob.
If you on the Imogen Poots front, you need to, if you haven't, you should watch Black Christmas again.
Oh, I love Black Christmas. That's the one that, like, there's been a few remakes of that one, of course.
Yes, but this is the Imogen one is the one that counts.
I love that one, and a lot of people don't, because I don't. I think it's like it's obviously not a straight remake of the original, which is a dreadful film. Like that is a movie that is like mean. That original Black Christmas film, because that original Black Christmas film is like it's coming from inside the house, right? Like,
it's one of those, and it's Bob Clark who directed Christmas Story.
Is Margot Kidder in that film?
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, right. So like that movie is like mean and like gruesome. I love the Imogen Poots one. I can't remember who directed that one.
I forget her name. I'd have to look it up.
And then they remade it again a few years ago to be more like the original. But that
middle
remake.
No, that's actually in between. That's in between.
Okay, so then I'm thinking of the Imogen Poots one. So yeah, so like that's I like the Imogen. That's the one with Cary Elwes, right?
Yes, and toxic masculinity galore.
Yes, yeah, I thought like it's so clever and fun, and people were like, oh, you know, it departs from the original. I'm like, I don't care, like I love that. Tell me
exactly.
Something new with the premise. But anyway, I'm a big Imogen Poots fan, and I thought that like her in 28, it's funny watching 28 Weeks Later, because like it's Imogen Poots, it's Jeremy Renner, it's Harold Perrineau, it's Rose Byrne, it's Idris Elba, like it's all these like people you know now, but like in 2007, you know.
Yes, yeah, so thank you, Danny Boyle, and from Purdue. He didn't direct the second one.
He didn't direct the second one. He directed the first and the third one, and Nia DaCosta is doing the Bone Temple, which is pretty cool.
Now I have a couple that are related to your graphic novel, by the way.
Yeah.
One is from 1958, and even though it's sort of a remake of the original Thing from Another World, but it's called It, the Terror from Beyond Space.
Nice.
And it is Alien 20 years before Alien.
Yeah, yeah.
They send a ship to Mars to as a rescue because their last mission, everyone's dead but one guy who claims it's a monster that killed everyone.
Yep.
And so they pick him up. And guess what comes on the ship with them? A monster.
The monster.
Right. Named
you
it.
should read this one, Bob. I think you'd enjoy
it. Oh, I wrote
it
down to get a look at it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other is Galaxy of Terror from 1981. It's one of those Corman movies from the time. Mm-hmm. Really, really sloppy and goopy. And there's monstery, sexy things going on. And Erin Moran from Happy Days, no less. And Robert Englund and Sid Haig, a lot of character actors, but it was well done from for there. My movie watching, it's been more classic, mm-hmm. as far back as watching the John Barrymore version of Jekyll and Hyde from 1920.
Mm.
But so I've done, let's see, The Call of Cthulhu, which was made by the H.P. Lovecraft Society, Historical Society. It's made as a silent movie, as if it was made in 1928 when that book came out.
Mm.
So there are special effects, including stop motion, when we get to that sort of stuff. We watched Abbott Costello Meet Frankenstein, Hellraiser, The Fog. I've now watched three different versions of Night of the Living Dead, the original, the 90 remake, and here's one you might not know about, Night of the Animated Dead.
Mm.
About 4 years ago, they made it as an animated feature.
Cool.
With Katie Sackhoff, Catherine Isabel, Dule Moore. It's really well done and very gruesome and includes scenes that they didn't shoot the first time around.
Yeah. Catherine Isabel, who is in Disturbing Behavior as James Marsden's younger sister.
Yeah.
That's a sad...
There's also American Mary. Come on.
I remember that movie freaked me out too. Hellraiser freaked me out too much. I couldn't watch more Hellraisers. And I know Hulu did that remake, which I know, Steve, you talked about a couple of years ago. Couldn't bring myself to watch it. That movie messed me up too much. The problem with Disturbing Behavior and the problem I think with a lot of like 90s horror films is like those big studios cut those movies to shit, man. Like... Mm-hmm. Like David Nutter talked about, like there's like 40 minutes of that film that like don't exist anymore. Like they were deleted scenes on like one DVD one time. The studio told them to cut it all out. And like, that's a movie that's like interesting in its premise of like high school cliques being like brainwashed pod people kind of thing. And it's like 30 minutes too short. Like everything happens and nothing happens, you know? The fact that also that James Marsden at 25 is playing a 16-year-old is insane to me.
Well, like there's lots of that.
Oh yeah. Like high schoolers in the 90s, like are like 35 years old playing 15, you know?
Have you seen The Faculty, Robert Rodriguez?
Well, that's the thing. I really want to watch The Faculty.
Oh, watch that. It's really good.
Faculty is really, really fun.
That's been on my list for a long time. It's no longer on the streamer that I wanted to watch it on. So I need to find it again. But I really want to watch that one, especially after Disturbing Behavior.
That's a great, like, if you're in the mood for, like, goofier horror, at least for now.
Yeah.
Like, not that Faculty is too goofy. It's not, but it fits into that sweet spot of being like of that era ridiculous. You'll see. It's good sci-fi horror fun.
I love 90s horror, man. Like there's something like kitschy and like self-aware about it all. Like that's when you get the Scream films. That's when you get like I Know What You Did, like the Final Destination stuff. Like
all the Kevin Williamson stuff, absolutely.
Yeah. Like it's silly. You get enough frights from it, and it's so indicative of the time, you know, that it's a really fun like time capsule to go back and watch, you know, in the same way that like those horror films of like the 70s, which are disturbing as hell, like that was a pretty
Last
dark
House,
time.
Amityville, The Omen. Yes.
Like, you know, like there's some rough stuff from that era, and I think like there's obviously reasons for it. But I just think like I really love those 90s horror films, and I for the same reason that I've really enjoyed a lot of the horror films from the last like 5 or 6 years too, because I think just like the commentary and the discussion in them I think is really, really interesting.
Hey, if you're in the high school horror mode and you want to drift back a decade, a great double feature is the remake of The Blob from 88, which is really well done.
Yeah,
I like that one.
And that's Christine, and watch it with Christine back to back.
Yeah. I love The Blob. I love all those Blob movies, man. They're fantastic. Nothing Emily's family goes to or used to go to Blob Fest.
Oh, in Pennsylvania, where nice in the theater. Well, they show it in the theater where it was.
They do, and she said that you used to be able to like sign up early, and like they would like shoot you running out of the theater. Kind of like recreating the scene. Yeah, they haven't gone the last few years. I think especially since the pandemic, it's kind of like, I don't want to say it's taken a hit, but like they've had to adjust a little bit. But this year, actually, we are going to go to the Mahoning Drive-In and see a double feature. We haven't been able to in the past, but I'm really excited to go to that. I think they're doing. Let me pull it up. I'll pull up what it is. I'll let you know. But I'm excited to go do like a horror double feature at the drive-in.
In a drive-in.
Yeah.
Get the terribly soggy French fries and do the
Oh
whole
yeah.
thing. Yeah.
Have my little like my hand crank radio playing the audio. Yeah. Let's see
I've
what they're
got one of
playing.
those.
Oh yeah, dude.
Aaron, why don't you jump in here for some Huck before we move on to my lightning round?
So it's so funny you said what you said about Huck. I was gonna say Huck Tua about Huck because they do say in there, like you said, it happened before the game. And again, that I felt myself triggered again. As I read that, I was like, oh, that motherfucker. And then I'm reading through because I see that, and it almost sort of like set my brain for a certain expectation because I'm like, well, why would it be relevant that this happens before then? And then they start mowing people down left and right. Oh, that's why.
Oh.
Okay, now we get it. Because Joey, just to give you some context, in the big game, everyone in the Millarverse was basically murdered.
Oh,
Oh,
Jesus.
to include Huck. Just taken out by this sort of super secret group. And that's why John and I were enraged and triggered. So Huck caught one. I can't remember. I think he got hit with like a nuclear bomb. I can't remember. But they all died. And so that's why this is sort of like it's significant the way they're saying, okay, this happens before that because, this would have been the first time someone tried to kill him. Yeah. But the only gripe I have with this issue is where it left off, to be honest with you, because there was an expectation of where the last one left off that you would get more, I wouldn't say payoff, but more impact from that. And you didn't really get that. All you got was a little suspicion of, oh, something's not right. I don't sense anyone, something doesn't feel right. Where's my mom? And that was pretty much it. And I'm like, well, I kind of wanted to see there be more of a reaction to that. But now the ending centers, I don't want to spoil it, but the ending centers that revelation now. The revelation of Huck and what's her face. Which makes me less ex have lower expectations that I'm going to get the emotional payoff that what happened in the end of the last issue is going to give me. So yeah, I'm a little worried about that, especially since there's only one more issue. So we'll see.
See, I didn't know anything about that big, what is it?
Oh,
Big game? Big
big
Huck
game.
game? Big
Everyone
game.
was murdered. Yeah.
Right, and I vaguely remember you all talking about that. It must have been almost a year and a half ago at
Yeah,
this
over.
point,
Yeah.
right?
Like
And so,
the
like,
entire universe was murdered. Go
yes,
ahead.
exactly. I vaguely remember that. So, like, when Huck Tua came out and y'all were like, how's Huck still around? I was like, oh, okay, maybe this is like, we're just telling a new story. But that kind of upsets me a little bit about like, oh, he's kind of doing like a precursor to that story, given what happens to that character there. So like, I don't know. I don't know what it means. It's kind of upsetting because like when this series started, we thought it was going to be about one something else,
Yeah.
And then they did the thing with like finding other supers, which was cool, but then it also then wasn't about that at all. It was about this like witch hunter going
Yeah.
after them. So like I don't know. I haven't really put my finger on what this book is supposed to be. I've enjoyed issue by issue what I've read. I don't know if it's going to be the same kind of like must read recommendation book that the first
Yeah.
Huck was. Like I
Yeah.
still recommend that first Huck to people, right? That are looking for a comic book story. So yeah, I don't know. It's very interesting.
Well, spoilers for, a what 2-year-old story in big game. Everyone is alive again because of some
What?
timey-wimey stuff.
What? What?
Some timey-wimey stuff happened,
What?
at the end. So, there was
That's
that. But
messed
still.
up.
Anyway.
Anyway, Bob, at the Mahoning on the when I'm going
Mm-hmm.
at the end of the month, it's a Universal Monster Mash
Ooh.
evening. They're not showing the main ones, probably because of what he could get the rights to. So it's going to be like House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula, what else is on here? Werewolf of London. Some of these like kind of like sequels too. Oh, and the
Yeah.
OG Dracula. Have I ever shown y'all when I dressed up as the Invisible Man?
No.
Oh, I'll put it in the chat. Invisible Man is my favorite Universal Monster film. I love it so much because I'm a theater guy and I love all the kind of like movie magic that they do. But maybe I'll watch that one again. I love the Invisible Man.
Yeah, for you from 1933 that they could do those effects, pretty special.
Yeah.
I think it was John Fulton who did that.
I watched
Wow.
Abbott and Costello meet the Invisible Man.
Not
Abbott and
their shining
Costello.
moment, but it's fun.
Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein is Emily's
Yeah.
one of Emily's favorite movies.
I watched that
Greatest
last month
horror
too.
comedy of all time.
Watched that last month too. I
Yeah,
got a
the two
twofer.
House of Movies are fun monster rallies. Everyone's there. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but they're a lot of fun.
Oh, sure.
All right, are we ready for our last lightning round?
Who is it?
It's me.
Yeah.
Yay.
Boom.
All right, I got a couple for you this week. I'm gonna do a couple of quick hits and then we'll get into the main course at the end here. Aaron, you remember the comic Sleep that we were reading?
I do.
Okay, I checked
Wait.
out issues 2 through 5. Are you caught up at all?
I cannot remember now, to be honest with you.
Okay, well.
Hold up. Well, you talk and I'll go
So
back and front.
this is from Xander Cannon. The series continues with Jonathan Reason waking up each morning to find he's allegedly gone on a new massacre. Almost his entire town or city is wiped out, and he's trying to put the pieces together. I'm enjoying it, but I do think that it's starting to spin its wheels a little bit. It kind of feels like we're on a treadmill, and as remorseful as Jonathan is, the effort to stop the killings. It could be a little more urgent for my taste. There's a lot of like kind of like hanging around and crying about it, and maybe find yourself a bunker or perhaps a more fortified place to spend the night if you're that broken up about, I don't know, killing your entire town and or city or whatever. It seems very widespread. Continue to enjoy this though, and I really do love kind of the extent that it's a black and white comic with a lot of gray tones, but then there are these shocks of red. And they told us at the beginning of the series to basically follow the red, that everything that the red touches is significant to the story in some way or another. And so I really like following those shocks of color onto the ground, kind of acting as blood trails onto different objects within the environment, different clues as to what is actually happening or who the guilty party really is. Because I'd be very surprised if it's Jonathan at the end of this. I think he's being framed, but that's just me. So this goes to 8. We're 5 in. Like I said, getting a little long in the tooth, but still enjoying it and curious to see where it goes. I really want them to kind of like pull the curtain back and be like, ta-da, this is what was going on the whole time. And you go there, oh, that's pretty cool. That's about the level of what I want when all is said and done for this. Moving on, the Bat, no, sorry, just Batman 2. This is Matt Fraction and Jorge Jimenez. Okay, so this is a really great Robin issue. With Tim basically getting the bulk of issue number 2 here. So instead of pushing the overall plot forward, Fraction chooses to stick mostly with Bruce and Tim, letting you get a feel for how he's going to present their partnership. I'll say this. I'm getting hardcore Wayne family adventures from Fraction's work here. And that's all the positives of that series. There's a couple of solid Damian moments here. We get to see some more of the Batman's tech in action, and we find out how many gears the Batmobile really has. It might surprise you. Any guesses?
17.
13. It's
Okay,
13.
Bob, no. Aaron?
13.
You are correct.
I
Did
know,
you
I
read
read
this?
it.
Did you know that?
Yes, I
Oh,
read it.
you
Yes.
cheated. All right, the Department of Truth number 0. What is going on with this book? James Tynion the Fourth, Martin Simmons. So this is the Pizzagate issue. Really doing a slow burn to the Trump-related stuff. It has been a whole 3-issue arc, a one-shot-ish kind of thing, and now a number 0 before we've gotten back to the Trump-related stuff. And I am climbing the walls. Every time I think that we're diving in, Tynan reels it back, and I'm like, it's got to be the next issue. It has to be the next issue. Haven't gotten there yet, but we're getting closer and closer with this Pizzagate issue. Anyway, the issue revisits the concept that if you believe in something enough, it will manifest itself into real life. So when you start getting a bunch of people to drink the far right Kool-Aid, and you get paranoia like Pizzagate and other absurd narratives tied to the United States government, what happens when people like act on these beliefs and they show up to places thinking, like, let's say you go to a pizza parlor and you are convinced that there's a door downstairs that leads to like a sweatshop situation, or God forbid, some kind of horrible sex ring or something like that. What if you, the person who goes to stop this thing, is the reason that it exists? Is pretty much what this book is asking. And I just love the way that this series continues to play with reality. It is going in the Trump direction, and as much as I'm, in everyday life, sick and tired of looking at his face and everything like that, like, I have been dying to see Tynan's take on all of that stuff through the lens of this setup and this story and this series. The series has really deconstructed a lot of some of the craziest things in our government's history, whether it be UFOs or cryptids or weird projects that people don't know a hell of a lot about. And I'm very, very, very excited to see how some of the madness that we've endured over the last decade and change comes off in this series. So very excited about that. And last, but definitely not least, I checked out Author Immortal number 1 from Frank J. Barbieri and Morgan Beam. I have not heard the name Frank J. Barbieri in what feels like eons.
Yeah, like 15 years.
I just reading that name made me so nostalgic for some of the early, like, Talking Comics talking points on this show, like Five Ghosts and a couple of other things. There was a story with Matt Kent in the news that was making me miss, like, mind management and Department H and stuff like that. So I don't know. I might have to go digging. I might have to go and read a couple of some of the older stuff. But anyway, so our Author Immortal, Hector Ramirez, is a failed writer who gets the opportunity of a lifetime to help reboot the fantasy book series that defined his childhood. But when he discovers the original author has mysteriously vanished into his fictional world, Hector is pulled into a realm where stories are alive and some are willing to kill to stay in control. Okay. This book is kind of crazy. It's basically an author who, a very celebrated author, let's call them J.K. Rowling, found this author, found
That
his
is
is.
not the character's name in the story.
Oh, it might as well
Let's
be,
call him
Joey. It
that.
might as well be, because holy shit, if this character is not an analog for J.K. Rowling's shenanigans, I don't know what is. This entire book is set up to basically go over to J.K. Rowling's house for a month's long sleepover to collaborate. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. Joey, you read this, right?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so I want to talk about a couple of things with this. I didn't really write down the overall plot. Basically, he's going to work with a J.K. Rowling-like author on like retooling the books, getting it ready for a new project, that kind of thing. But in order to do this, he's got to move in because they need to work alongside each other. Basically, toward the end of the book, you end up finding one of those, like, oh, the bookshelf moves. And there's this whole secret inside the manor of this author who is very Rowling coded. One of the things, first of all, I really, really enjoyed this a lot. One of the things that is kind of bothering me about it, though, and I think it's one of those things that we just haven't gotten to why it's in the story yet, but there's two occasions. This is a like a double issue. There's two occasions where our main character, Hector, is kind of revealed to be a little bit of a sleaze,
Yes.
where he's getting like picture texts from his students, basically saying like, "Oh, can't wait to, see you at private hours, professor," and blah blah blah. And then there's another part in the story where he's online and he actually has a website open for an escort service. So he's also got a fiance. So I don't really know what they're doing or why this is in the story. There's so much else going on that I really don't know how this is supposed to come off. But it's like stuck in the back of my mind that this is part of who this person is. Knowing they have a fiance, knowing that they're being dishonest, kind of makes it a difficult character to follow throughout the story, for me anyway. Anyway, I'd feel worse for his fiance if I didn't find her off-putting. She's constantly mentioning the trajectory of his success. She's somewhere between like ceaselessly encouraging and a little gold diggery, just a little bit. What other notes did I write here? The author is 1000% J.K. Rowling coded. I'm sorry, they are. Which I did not expect and love as a commentary. I love how obvious it is. I hope Barbieri's got something to say with making this character very obviously that person.
Hope he has good lawyers too.
Right?
Yeah, right.
Also, she's clearly evil, and it's
Well, J.K.
hilarious.
Rowling's exactly.
Yeah, Hector is obviously a sacrifice of some sort for a dark lord or whatever. I don't know. The last guy that was kind of on guard, it didn't really end too well for him. So we'll see what happens with Hector. But one of the cool things is that Hector has his kid along for the ride who happens to be trans. So they're with him and they are staying at this manor. So they're essentially staying, having a, like I said, a month's long sleepover in J.K. Rowling's house, knowing that this person is tied to everything that hates them for existing. And so that's a really, really interesting part of the story that I can't wait to see how they become a foil, bring this character down. I don't know. There's knowing Barbieri, there's going to be a very good reason why he writes the character this way. And I can't wait to see the commentary on that. This is cool. I honestly didn't know what this was until I saw it in the review folder. And I liked the title, and so I popped it open really quick. Oh, and I'll say, also say last, the watercolor artwork from Morgan Beam is absolutely awesome. Every single page of this comic is just filled to the brim with character and color and really, really cool artwork. Very fantasy. Little bit of Matt Kent going on, but kinder on the eyes. Sometimes Matt Kent stuff can get a little funky. I really enjoyed this. Joey, what did you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot going on, like you said, and there's a couple of sequences in there that I just don't really understand the context of. I was confused by the opening sequence, and I didn't really process when, where, or who those characters were supposed to be, of course, until the end, but like even then I still don't know. Yeah, I also read right through that coding of the author character immediately. I think the artwork is stupendous. It has some of that kind of like Rare Flavors flair to it, that kind of line work
Oh,
and that
yeah, I could
rich
see
color,
that.
which I really love. I like the premise. I also was very excited to see Barbieri's name on the thing. There's the final page, though. Like, you have the author thing, and you have, like, him having to go to London. And then you add in the trans child to his storyline, too. And you add the kind of sleaziness of him, kind of like the whatever implications there are of the affairs or the escorts or whatever. And I agree with you. Like, I don't really understand the presence of some of those character features in terms of the larger story.
Yeah.
And then the kind of final page where his kid, they enter this realm or whatever that they're going into through that secret door. And then the kid is portrayed in a particular way that seems to be at odds with what you see in the real world. So, like, I don't know. There's something a little, I was like, I don't know if, I don't know. It's, I couldn't really tell what's going on.
It's
that
weird.
Moment.
I think it needs to focus.
Yeah. We need to see what's going on in the next issue. I mean, I guess, like, look, what was the goal here, but to keep us
reading.
Apparently
this
you know?
Is like some kind of epic ongoing.
Which is wild to me. Like, when I looked up the solicit, and I was like, the new ongoing portal fantasy. And I was like, what the hell? Like, ongoing from Image? Yeah. Get out of town, you know? So, like, yeah, I agree. I think, like, there's some really interesting kind of, like, commentary going on here. There's a lot of sequences that I just do not understand the presence and context of. I love the artwork, though. I love the pace of it. I love the writing of it. So we'll see where it goes is kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that because it's in the review folder, it makes it an easy pickup for me. Like, I'll go and check it out. I do have to wonder, though, like, I hate to keep focusing on it, but like the whole professor thing getting together with the student, presumably, or the escort thing. Escorts are paid to give you attention and want to be with you. But like, what's up?
No, certainly. And I agree with you. But like the second I saw that text, I was like, I don't like this guy.
and that's kind of my point is like, Who are the people that are finding this person desirable? Because everything that we've been given, he's kind of a schlub. Like he's not a desirable person. It seems like the only people that are really finding him desirable are people that are looking for him to be something that he's not.
Or that are kind of dependent on him, right? In that kind of like power dynamic kind of scenario.
Yeah, like the fiance and stuff. I was like, I'm trying to like put myself in your shoes and I'm trying to feel something for you, but you're acting a kind of way that I'm just not warming to. It's weird.
And the author corollary who espouses many of the same beliefs as, you know,
I'm telling you.
Yeah. It's pretty clear, you know,
1000%.
Yeah. But like she's also exploiting him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
And I think like that's the kind of intention, right? Like he's exploiting the people in his life in the same way that she is now exploiting him.
But I feel like she's the only one that knows it. Like she sees him like, for what he is. Meanwhile, everybody else is kind of like, doo-doo-doo-doo.
Yeah, there's like that crazy sequence where like the author is like trying to type and like the demon in the corner is like, I took away your power, you know? And it's like, okay, what the fuck is happening here? I like it. It's one of these weird kind of like fantasy books, you know? And you're not going to get what you need from a fantasy story in the first chapter. You know what I mean? Like you need to kind of keep reading to see where it's going. I'm not entirely comfortable yet with the narrative and some of the characterization. So we'll see where it goes. This is a wait and see for me, but I will definitely see because I think the talent is very good. I think the art is very fantastic. I think the art is wonderful. I think the creature or whatever we're dealing with is genuinely terrifying the way that it's illustrated. So I'm eager to see where it goes.
Indeed. Did anybody happen to read this Matt Kent Oni Press article? It's really long.
What's the lead? Give us
that's
the lead,
the thing.
Steve.
I feel like they're burying it because I'm looking at it and I'm trying to read it while we're talking. Something Matt Kent Oni Press signed a publishing media partnership for bigger, bolder, weirder comics. So he's joining forces with them. And if you scroll all the way to the bottom, it looks like Mind Management is coming back. It's called Mind Management New and Improved. So I will definitely be reading that. And then there's another one from Matt Kent and Brian Hurt called Fort Psycho.
Nice.
Yeah, which has an incredible cover. Again, if you scroll all the way to the bottom of this Hollywood Reporter article. But yeah, I mean, it just looks like maybe he's going exclusive with them, or if not exclusive, like dedicating himself to boosting Oni's library with some of his original stuff.
All
That's
right.
awesome.
So here's what ChatGPT says.
Nice.
Says
The name you can trust.
exactly. Says Matt Kent is partnering with Oni Press under Polarity in a publishing plus media arrangement. The deal will bring Kent's Flux House imprint into Oni's fold, or at least collaborate under Oni's umbrella starting in mid-2026. Under the agreement, Oni acquires media rights, film, TV, animation, video games, licensing to more than 20 existing Flux House properties. Importantly, publishing rights might remain more complex and slightly separate in some cases. So it says here, three new titles are already announced, like you said, Mind Management, Fort Psycho, and Flux House Presents Number One. Clint will serve as a producer on some of the media stuff. Oni's parent, Polarity, is the umbrella under which Oni Press and Line 4 to operate. So that's what it says.
I mean,
And there you go.
it's pretty exciting, not exciting, but like it's pretty interesting because he's been with Dark Horse for so long. You know, so many of those Matt Kent books you read through Dark Horse. So jumping over to Oni is very exciting. Oni's been kind of up and down over the last 15 years. So, you know, getting a big name like Matt Kent is pretty cool.
Right on.
Yeah.
There
All
you
right.
have it.
And
There
you
you
know
have
who will never leave Dark Horse?
it.
Hellboy.
Very true. Okay. I think I'm going to get us out of here
Get out.
at a decent time. Let's talk about the books we're looking forward to next week. Efficiency, efficiency, efficiency.
Get out of town.
Joey, what are you looking forward to?
It's a big Image week and Dark Horse week for me. I got a lot of really interesting kind of issue ones, as it were, from like the main publishers. DC, I'm getting Absolute Batman number 13, Superman the Kryptonite Spectrum number 3. I might get Binary number 1. I mean, Stephanie Phillips, like, it's really awesome, but the fact that it's under that Age of Revelations banner is upsetting to
Yes.
me because I'm trying to avoid that X crossover as much as
Come
possible.
on, there are only nine number one issues this week.
don't
What are you complaining
don't
about?
Don't get me started, Bob, please. I will say Jeremy Whitley's got a Strange Tale coming out, so I'll
Yes,
probably get
indeed.
that one. Strange Tale's number 1. But other than that, it's a lot of kind of independent stuff. Power Fantasy number 12 coming back. Temporal number 1 by Stephanie Williams looks really cool. The Unchosen number 4. Last Day of H.P. Lovecraft number 1 from Boom Studios looks really awesome. Everything Dead and Dying number 2. Speaking of James Tynion, we got Red Book number 1, which is kind of a spin-off of his Blue Book series, which was really cool. Titans got Little Nightmares, Descent to Nowhere number 1, Blink and You'll Miss It number 2. High Strangeness is like kind of a horror real life graphic series coming out. The Guy in the Chair number 1, and Death to Pachinko number 1. A lot of really weird number ones coming out this week that I'll probably be checking out. So tune in.
And no X books. I love
Dude, I cannot, I cannot, I cannot, I cannot.
Well,
Anyway.
anyway, Aaron, what are you picking up?
have all those number ones as well. I'm also including Masterminds number two, Blood and Thunder number six, and Action Comics 1091, and of course Power Fantasy.
Sweet. Bob, what are you picking up?
Oh, I've got a huge week like everyone else, except it's Harley Quinn and Elvira by Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti. And Strange Tales number one, it is Jeremy Whitley. Artist is Bailey
Yes.
Underwood. And just in case, I'll give you the solicit. Roll the dice if you dare. It's Halloween. And Nico Minoru joins her girlfriend, Carolina Dean, and friends Teddy Altman and Billy Kaplan for a rousing round of RPG Huskows and Hydras.
Hell yeah.
But when a dice roll leads to goblins materializing in real life and her friends all disappearing, Nico is soon left running through New York City streets with a real dragon hot in her tail. desperate for help, she finds herself at the Scarlet Witch's last door. Will these two witches find the missing heroes and piece together how this board game came to life? Or will their adventure end in a critical loss?
Ba-ba-bum.
A lot of fan bases covered, Whitley. We love it.
Yeah, this is... We're all there. I was just getting it based off of the Whitley-ness of it all, but now I'm even more excited.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. For me, I've got Absolute Batman number 13, Transformers number 25, Everything Dead and Dying number 2, Strange Tales number 1, Something is Killing the Children, A Monster Hunter Walks into a Bar number 1, Children of the Round Table number 2, and the new Teeny Howard joint, Marion Heretic number 1. And that's gonna do it. Bob, you have some closing statements here.
Real quickly, because it is that time of the month, Nikki's Book Club is this Thursday at Three's Brewing in Huntington, and we are discussing the novel by Paul Tremblay, horror movie. Mr. Tremblay wrote The Cabin at the End of the World a little while back, and that was apparently pretty good. This one is not. This is a piece of crap. But we read it, and I don't think it's going to go over well, but it's going to have a lovely conversation. Here's the deal, really quickly. It is set in three different time periods, three different casts, so to speak. A fellow who is part of the cast and crew making a 90s sort of found footage indie horror movie where the script involves torturing one of the kids from the school that nobody likes that ends up with someone really hurt. And then they're going to do a remake, a big budget remake. And there's a big twist, dun, 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 that you can see coming 40 pages in, but takes place over the last like 8 pages. It is poorly written with no characterization, but thankfully was only 270 pages. So that was good.
And she'll never get back.
That's long, Bob.
Wow.
Don't read this book. That's all I'm saying. But come to our book club, because the books that are terrible are really the best meetings of all.
Oh, always.
Yeah, we can slag on a book pretty heavy. The one that was the most fun was only Nikki and I who didn't like The Hobbit. And people were very, very upset at us.
Yeah, I could see people. I mean, I don't have any skin in the game, but I could definitely see other people being upset.
It was the greatest book I've ever read. No. And Nikki made one point where I thought it was wonderful. Bilbo gets hit in the head every other minute. Doesn't he have like post-concussion syndrome at this point? How's he even upright? She acted it out for the entire crowd of about 30 people. It was great.
Yikes.
You know, yeah. I've never read Class any act. Of those Tolkien books.
Good so, for you.
I tried reading them. There were too many songs.
Okay. All right.
Aaron, go ahead. You like them apparently, or not. Let's see.
Yeah, bygones. So I wanted to remind people that Bob and I will be, along with some other folks, probably going to be at NYCC this coming weekend. So I'm going to try my best to post some things on our Discord. So if you're on our Discord, you know, maybe jump on over there and see what's happening. And then also some things on IG, and maybe, you know, do a live here or there, depending on when we're walking through the floor, just to sort of, you know, keep everyone updated on what's going on, and also use it as a way of touching base. If you are there and you want to see where Bob and I are somewhere on the floor, say hi and, you know, all that jazz, you know, maybe slide into our DMs on Instagram, you know, all that stuff, as the kids say. Or, you know, hit us up on the Discord or something and just sort of, you know, keep us posted on where you are and maybe we will meet up somewhere. So
yeah, or find the guy selling old cartoons on DVD. That's where Aaron and I will be.
Okay. Yeah, there's a likelihood, yes. But the other thing is I got the opportunity this weekend. I was invited by the Homo Superior guys to participate in a friendly game of Family Feud. Mutant Edition, X-Men Edition. And it was hosted by, I guess, an organization called House of Carnation. And I wanted to really talk them up because What they've done is they've created this sort of social media space with their own sort of, I think the best way they described it was their own sort of a Facebook type situation that they have created, where they want to provide opportunities for people who are othered or feeling lonely or whatever is the case to go and meet and do fun things and see fun things and all that jazz without there being a, sort of undercurrent of doom and gloom and all that jazz there. So I was asked to be a part of that, and it was so fun. Our team won. I was part of the Homo Superior team. But I really want to point that out. I will send a link to Steve so he can put it in the show notes if you want to check it out. But it was really fun, and they seem like really good people. And I really wanted to just give some shine to someone, an organization who's trying to do something positive. So there's that.
Did you win the fast money?
Our team won. It wasn't a fast money situation, but our team
Okay.
won. Yes. So that was it. I was never the one that hit the buzzer in time, but
Give us a
most of,
question. Well, don't give us a
well,
question. No spoilers. Listen to the show.
well, oh, by the way,
Yeah.
yeah, it's on the show. It's on their site. So we'll put the link, in the show notes, and they put it up,
Yeah.
on the site.
I just remember at FlameCon during X Games when I would just lean over to Aaron and whisper the answer into his ear.
We were so mad at you, Joey. You could have cleaned up.
You
And
know,
Joey's
you
like, it's
know.
not about me. It's not
I
about
try
me this
to, I try
time.
to, I try to respect the spaces that I'm in, you know.
It's like, it's not about me, So yeah, it was fun. Check it out. Go look and see me, basically see our team steal all of our points.
Nice.
When you say that they've posted it, do you mean Homo Superior or elsewhere?
The House of Carnation have posted it. So I'm actually looking at the feed right now, but you'll be able to see. You have to just, it's a free to join type thing, and you'll be able to get in there and sort of see that they've posted the stream.
All
They
right,
did it twice, I think.
I'll try my best to put the link in the show notes, the like the hot button or whatever to link stuff that you can click on doesn't always pan out when you're doing one of those. So
Put it in
we'll do
the
our
Discord and stuff like that. So
we'll do that, yeah.
yeah. Just so people know where to get it elsewhere in case I can't make the magic happen. All right. Awesome. Look at that. 8:43. Hear that, John? That's how you do it.
Oh, Jesus
No.
Christ. Just calling him out.
No, he did a great job when he hosted the other week. Did a
Are
really
you
good job.
weaking
What's
when you
up?
say that? Why are you weaking when you say that?
No,
Am I weaking?
no. Stop it. It's radio, okay? Stop trying to bully Steve
No. He did
here.
everybody does a great job. It's part of why I've been so like, yeah, you guys got it, bye. Because I know everybody does such a great job when it's their turn to host the show. Somebody else will host next week. And I really quick, I just want to I put out a thing on the Discord last week after we posted the show. I was really, really out of it last week. I'm doing a little bit better this week as far as like medication adjustment goes. But I just want to thank everybody for their kind words. I kind of went off a little bit in the chat apologizing for myself, and people were like, get out of here. You
Yeah.
know, like, you're fine. I forget who it is. Somebody was like, oh, it wasn't any different from any other week. And I'm thinking to myself, like, oh,
Oh.
Jesus, that's awful. Like, considering how I thought it went, that's bad. But I know what they meant. It's fine. But anyway, I just want to thank our listeners. They're always just such great, great people, very understanding, very patient, and very a lot of them know us by now, and they I think people can tell when we're kind of going through it a little bit. And I just wanted to let everybody know that I'm all right. I'm just adjusting to a couple of things, hopefully come out the other side feeling a little bit better about the world. We shall see. But anyway, much love to you all, and yeah, we'll be back next week. Let me get the script up here. We've reached the end of this week's edition of the Talking Comics Podcast. As always, you can send us your comments or questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. If you want a link to the Discord, just reach out to one of us and we will make a fresh copy of that number. That always seems to change, regardless of me setting it to not do that. And as soon as we can, we will send you a link back to the Discord so you can get in there and talk with everybody and leave us questions and, you know, get in touch with us. Write that in there. It's a lot of fun to go in there. Anyway, Bob, where can our listeners find you?
Old-fashioned email, bobreyer at talkingcomicbooks.com.
Joey?
Joey at talkingcomicbooks.com.
Aaron?
Roaming the streets of Manhattan.
All right. And I am at dead_anchoress online. Bronwyn is at shinybabyb. And I believe John is John at talkingcomics.com.
I think it's John Burkle at talkingcomics.com.
John Burkle at talking.
It might be Burkle John. Is it Burkle?
No, it's John,
John
Burkle. It's John Burkle.
He'll have to come in and fill us in. All right. Be excellent to each other. Thank you all so much for listening. And until next time on the Talking Comics podcast, to be continued.